All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Namo Om Vishnupadaya, Krishna Prashtaya, Bhutale, Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namane, Namaste Saraswati Deve, Gauravani Pacharani, Nivasesa Sanyavadi Paskatyade Satarane, Vandeham Sri Guru, Sri Yutam Padakamalam, Sri Gurun Vaishnavam Stashi, Rupam Sai Vrajatam Sahagana, Raghunatam Vitam Stam Sajivam, Sadvaitam Sadvadutam, Parichita Sahichat, Krishna Chaitanya Deva, Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lavita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha Vanshakalpatri Vishaki Vasnavya Vatapati Chanampanaya Vaishnava Namo Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So today is the 29th of September, 2021, from Hilo, Hawaii, over the internet, and we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, The Creation of the Fourth Order, Chapter 28, Paranjana Becomes a Woman in the Next Life, Text 31. Ekai kasya bhavatesham Raja marbuda marbudam Bokshyate yadvam sadharayar Mahiman vataram padam. Please. Ekasya. Of each one, abhavat, there became, tesham, of them, rajan, O king, arbudam, 10 million, arbudam, 10 million, Bokshite is ruled, yet whose Vamsadharai, thy descendants, Mahi, the whole world, Manu Antaram, up to the end of one Manu, Param. And afterward, Srila Prabhupada's translation, my dear King Prachini Barishat, the sons of Malayadwaja gave birth to many thousands and thousands of sons, and all of these have been protecting the entire world up to the end of one Manu's lifespan and even afterward. Srila Prabhupada's purport, there are 14 Manus in one day of Brahma. A Manvantara, the lifespan of one Manu, is given as 71 multiplied by 4,320,000 years. After one such Manu passes on, another Manu begins his lifespan. In this way, the life cycle of the universe is going on. As one Manu follows another, the cult of Krishna consciousness is being imparted, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 4.1, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Imam Vivavase Yogan. Proktaram aham avyayam vivasan manave praha manur ikshvakave bravit. The Blessed Lord said, I instructed this imperishable science of yoga to the sun god, Vivasvan, and Vivasvan instructed it to Manu, the father of mankind, and Manu in turn instructed it to Ishvaku. Vivasvan, the sun god, imparted Bhagavad Gita to one Manu, and this Manu imparted it to a son, who imparted it to yet another Manu. In this way, the propagation of Krishna consciousness is never stopped. No one should think that this Krishna consciousness movement is a new movement. As confirmed by Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, it is a very, very old movement, for it has been passing down from one Manu to another. You know, the sociologists often call us a new religious movement, NRM, new religious movement. Among Vaishnavas, there may be some difference of opinion. Due to everyone's personal identity. What a statement. Among Vaishnavas, there may be some difference of opinion due to everyone's personal identity. So that's part of having a personal identity, is to have various opinions. But despite our personal differences, the cult of Krishna consciousness must go on. We can see that under the instructions of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Srila Bhakti Santa Sarasvati Goswami Maharaj began preaching the Krishna consciousness movement in an organized way within the past 100 years. The disciples of Srila Bhakti Santa Sarasvati Goswami Maharaj are all godbrothers, and although there are some differences of opinion, and although we are not acting conjointly, every one of us is spreading this Krishna consciousness movement according to his own capacity and producing many disciples to spread it all over the world. As far as we are concerned, we have already started the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, and many thousands of Europeans and Americans have joined this movement. Indeed, it is spreading like wildfire. The cult of Krishna consciousness, based on the 9 principles of devotional service, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Bandhanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmani, Vedanam, from Bhagavatam 7.5.23, will never be stopped. It will go on without distinction of caste, creed, color, or country. No one can check it. The word bokshite is very important in this verse. Just as a king gives protection to his citizens, these devotees, following the principles of devotional service, will give protection to all the people of the world. The people of the world are very much harassed by so-called religious principled swamis, yogis, karmis, and jnanis, but none of these can show the right way to become elevated to the spiritual platform. There are primarily 4 parties spreading devotional service all over the universe. All over the universe, Prabhupada says. These are the Ramanuja Sampradaya, the Madhva Sampradaya, the Vishnu Swami Sampradaya, and the Nimbarka Sampradaya. Well, that's interesting to say all over the universe, because Ramanuja, Madhva, Vishnu Swami, and Nimbarka are earth beings, whereas if we go to the origin, if we're going to go Shiva, Lakshmi, 4 Kumaras, and Brahma, they're universal beings. Going on, the Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya in particular comes from Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. All these devotees are spreading this Krishna consciousness movement very widely and giving protection to innocent people who are being so much embarrassed by pseudo-avatars, swamis, yogis, and others. Ekai kasya bhavat te sham rajam arbudam arbudam bokshite yad vamsadharayar mahi manvantaram param. My dear king Paritini Parishat, the sons of Malayadraja gave birth to many thousands and thousands of sons, and all of these have been protecting the entire world up to the end of one Manu's lifespan and even afterward. I mean, it's interesting. It's not that each of these 7 sons had 10 million and 10 million children, but in other words, their descendants have gone in it. And Prabhupada's translating this as thousands and thousands. So in the word for word, he's saying 10 million, and the translation is saying thousands. So here Srila Prabhupada's making the point that real religion is eternal, that being conscious of Krishna is eternal. And I think I can say fairly certainly, with reasonable certainty, that those of us who joined the Hare Krishna movement had as our understanding that we were dedicating ourselves to something that was eternal and universal. Now, I suppose you could say that the same would be true for the followers of any religion, but that isn't exactly the case. There are certainly some religions that claim to be very exclusive, that claim to have some sort of exclusive truth that is not meant for people in general. Sometimes it's bounded by, you know, ethnic or blood considerations. You know, you have to be born into a certain religion and so forth. But with Krishna consciousness, we have a concept that what we are teaching is universal. And by universal, we mean applicable to all living beings at all times, at all places, and under all circumstances. Yes? So, of course, not every aspect of our International Society for Krishna Consciousness that Prabhupada makes note of in the purport is universal. And there are certain aspects of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness that are very time, place, and circumstantial. For example, we have, you know, our Sunday feast. That's not a universal principle, to have a Sunday feast. Even if you're going to talk about what process of connecting with the Supreme, so, you know, we talk about how in other ages, like in the Satya Yuga, the main process was meditation, right? Then the main process was yajna. fire yajna. Then the main process was deity worship. And now the main process is the holy name. So, of course, we also engage in meditation. We also engage in deity worship. We also have fire yajnas and so forth. But the main means of connecting with the Lord and loving the Lord and serving the Lord is going to change according to circumstances. And then in different, among the different sampradayas, there's going to be differences. So there's definitely differences. We cannot say that exactly the way the ISKCON is going on now is everything about it is universal. That's not true. But if we're going to talk about Krishna consciousness, and we understand Krishna to mean the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so to have some consciousness of the Supreme, an awareness of the Supreme, to be connected in yoga with the Supreme, that is universal. It's universal because everyone is connected with the Supreme. There's no question of anybody not being connected with the Supreme. So the consciousness is one becomes aware of that connection and one starts behaving with body, mind, and words in the reality of that connection. Yeah, so that is a universal principle. There is a God. There is a God who is the creator, maintainer, and destroyer. We are all part of that God. We are all connected to that God. And our relationship of connection is that of service. That he is the superior and we are the inferior. That we are meant to be connected through service. That we are meant to be connected through love. That we have a oneness with our Creator in terms of quality, but we don't have a oneness with our Creator in terms of power, in terms of quantity. So these are always true. It doesn't matter who you are, where you are, what you believe, what you do. Those things are always true. And to teach this truth of eternal religion, there are also, at least according to this purport, some other things are said other places, but at least according to this purport. So these eternal truths are always being taught. They're always available. Now, they may not always be available in every place or to every living being. There may not necessarily be a teacher of the eternal religion everywhere at all times. But somewhere within the universe, there are teachers of this eternal religion and there are practitioners of this eternal religion. It is objective truth. You know, scientists talk a lot about, is there any objective truth? How do we know there's any objective truth outside of our perception of truth? And of course, you know, by definition, we can't know that. We can't know whether what we're perceiving, even if all human beings on the planet are perceiving it, is objectively true, separate from our perception. There's no way we can know something like that. But we do know that we exist. We do know that we are conscious of our own existence. It's reasonable to assume that other living beings like ourselves are also conscious of their own existence. And of course, they tell us that they are. And we see that we are serving. You know, I have to serve my body. When my body says, you know, sleep, at a certain point, I have to sleep. I can stay awake for a while, but at a certain point, I have to sleep. My body will say, breathe. Again, I can hold my breath for a certain amount of time. After a while, I'm forced to breathe. You know, my body will tell me that I have to pass stool and urine. And again, I can wait for some time, but at a certain point, I have to be obedient. So I am serving my body. Yes, and I am serving, of course, in ordinary life. I'm serving other humans. I'm serving the government. You know, I'm always serving. So the fact that we exist, that we are conscious beings, and that we are always serving, is certainly a universal experience. Also, the urge for eternity, knowledge, and bliss is a universal experience. The urge to live, just like Srila Prabhupada says, no one dies peacefully, saying this the other day in a class. He said, if I put a gun to your head and I say, now die peacefully, so who will agree? So we all want to live eternally. We don't necessarily want to live in some old, decrepit body in a nursing home eternally. But we all would like to live eternally in full youthfulness and vigor We would all like to have knowledge and understanding, and we would all like to have pleasure. So these are also, again, universals. And it doesn't matter what you believe, these are simply universal truths. And so how to achieve that, how to achieve for all eternity knowledge and bliss, how to serve, what is the best person to serve, what is the best way to serve, that is, again, it is always taught. But as Prabhupada is making the point here, that there are going to be also differences in how universal truth is taught. I really like it where Srila Prabhupada said, among Vaishnavas there may be some differences of opinion due to everyone's personal identity. Prabhupada wrote a letter to Ekayani saying, you have an opinion which may be different from that of your husband, but that does not mean that you and your husband are not both Vaishnavas. Ekayani was married to Gopal Krishna Maharaj when he was in the household or ashram. So, you know, even between husband and wife, there's going to be differences of opinion. I was reading about this one Christian group that preaches that a wife can never say no to her husband about anything. She always has to agree with her husband about everything. And of course, such a concept is going to lead to wide-scale abuse, because it's not possible for two living beings to agree about everything all the time. Right? We see in the Shastra, Gandhari doesn't always agree with Dhritarashtra, Draupadi doesn't always agree with Yudhisthira, Sita doesn't always agree with Ram, because they're different persons. Balaram and Krishna don't always agree with each other. That's the nature of personal identity, due to everyone's personal identity. Sometimes we think, if I could just get everyone to agree with me about everything, then the world would be a nice place. But that's not a fact. So we are going to have different opinions about how to present Krishna consciousness, how to spread Krishna consciousness, how to follow our spiritual master. This is going to be true even among God brothers and God sisters of the same spiritual master. Just like I know many devotees where their whole emphasis is on book distribution, and other devotees where their whole emphasis is on cow protection, and other devotees where their whole education, it's all on education of children, and other devotees where their whole emphasis is on deity worship. And often people think that, well, if I could just convince everybody else to think the way that I do, then everything would be lovely. But it wouldn't. If everybody was protecting cows and nobody was distributing books, that would not be lovely. And if everybody was distributing books and nobody was protecting cows, that would not be lovely. And people are preaching differently. And just like we have, and we know one devotee who's a disciple of Tamal Krishna Raj, who's preached very successfully in China, where it's illegal to be religious. And he's preached mostly by offering vegetarian cooking classes. And then he puts, of course, some philosophy into the classes. And then he takes his cooking students on tour to Vrindavan and Mayapur. Of course, now in the pandemic, that's not going on. But he was taking yearly groups to Vrindavan and Mayapur and getting people to take up Krishna consciousness like that. Now, such a strategy wouldn't really make any sense, you know, in Mumbai. You don't need to give vegetarian cooking classes in Mumbai. And, you know, it's a different strategy depending on the particular people. Even we may change somewhat our language of presentation according to the particular audience. Yeah? I mean, this is just, this is one of the 14 items of knowledge, is to act according to time, place, and circumstance. So part of it is individual proclivity. One devotee asked me, he was yesterday, the day before, he said, why is it that some people are inspired to preach to people who don't know anything about Krishna consciousness, other people are more inspired to preach to devotees, other people are more inspired to preach to advanced devotees, because his spiritual master is telling him, you know, you should become an expert preacher in a variety of circumstances. And he said, why are people inspired in different ways? And I said, well, it's individual. And Krishna is inspiring us in different ways according to different needs. Again, you don't want everyone to have the same inspiration, because the inspiration is needed widely, and it's going to be different. How you present Krishna consciousness to people who know nothing about it is going to be very different than how you present Krishna consciousness to people who've been practicing for 30 or 40 years. So, you know, there's going to be differences like that, and according to one's personal taste. Prabhupada describes this in, I believe, the 16th chapter of the Nectar Devotion, that we should serve according to our taste. And some people are really going to like one type of service, and other people are really going to like another type of service. And so if those people end up being in charge of a temple or in charge of an institution, their personal likes and dislikes will color the institution. I had this experience as a Gurukul teacher. So as a Gurukul teacher, all of my students learned public speaking, all of my students learned logic, and all of my students learned art. But I never had a music class. I also had Sanskrit. We required Sanskrit for everybody. But I never had a music class, and I believed that I would like to have a music class, but my problem was I didn't have a teacher. That was what I believed to be true. So as part of my PhD, I had to do spend a year being an assistant principal in a local government school, local public school. And that school had an amazing music program. The music teacher had a big position of responsibility and respect in the school. And the music program was just excellent. I mean, they had general music lessons for the whole school, and then all the kids had available to get private music lessons and particular instruments. It was really well developed. They had no public speaking program at all. They had no logic program at all. And their art program was pretty bad. It existed. They had a lot of nice equipment, but as far as really teaching the kids art, it didn't do that. And I remember thinking, why is it that this school has a different emphasis than the schools that I ran? And I finally concluded that it was the priority of the principal. That what the principal felt was a priority was what got done in the school. What the principal didn't feel a priority was what didn't get done or got done partially. And then I came to understand that that was also true of my school. And I came to see that that's true in general. You know, if you travel around the world and you go to different centers, different projects, different temples, you will find that the emphasis very much represents the emphasis of the leader. It's like that. And this comes to even things like how neat and clean the property is. It comes to how much emphasis the leaders put on things like neatness and cleanliness. How beautiful the property is depends very much on the emphasis of the leader toward aesthetics and towards beauty. Some people don't care about that as much as others. So this sort of aspects of the personal identity of the leader, it very much pervades a project. And of course, the personal identities of the persons within the project. And if it's a very, very big project, like ISKCON is, then you find different centers with different focuses and different people having different focuses. And of course, this goes even beyond just within one organization. It goes then, if you're going to find all of the different organizations that came from Sarasvati Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Maharaj. I mean, here we're reading that the seven sons of King Malayadwaj, that they produce ultimately thousands or millions of followers. And these seven sons represent hearing, chanting, remembering, etc. So according to these different aspects of devotional service, there's so many people that come from them and practice in different ways. So if we think about the Sarasvat community, again, we find differences. We find differences in mood. We find differences in emphasis. I mean, we just do. And if someone says, well, the mood and the emphasis is all the same everywhere, then they haven't been everywhere, or they haven't been really paying attention. And one reason that the mood and the emphasis is different is because different people are attracted to these differences. Some people will want a particular mood. Some people are attracted to another mood. And if someone says, well, everyone should have the mood of my organization, that doesn't work. We're personalists. And then if you go beyond that, if you want to look at the Gaudiya Sampradaya beyond the Sarasvat line, so I have friends who are in other completely different branches of the Gaudiya Sampradaya. I have a good friend in the Nityananda Parivara. I have a good friend in the Gadadhar Parivara. I know people who are followers in the line coming from Narottama Das Thakur in Manipur. And so for these people, Bhaktivinoda, Bhaktisiddhanta are not acharyas in their particular branch. And they're familiar with their particular branch of the Gaudiya Sampradaya and their particular acharyas. And again, they will have somewhat of a different mood, and their practices even may be somewhat different. a different emphasis. Even sometimes the understanding of philosophical points may be somewhat different. Some of the books that they emphasize will be somewhat different. Just like even within ISKCON. So, you know, if you have Bhakti Tirtha Swami as your guru, so you're going to read his books. But somebody with a different guru might not read his books. And this is, certainly happens within different whole branches. And it's interesting, you know, if you look at a tree, I mean, we have this idea of the branch of the Chaitanya tree. If you go, you know, if you look out, like I can look out my window and I can look at a tree. And any particular tree, palm trees have no branches, but if you look at a tree that has branches, so each branch of a particular tree is different from every other branch on that tree. It's not that a tree has 10 branches or 20 branches or 50 branches and they all look exactly identical to each other. No, they have differences. And of course, as I mentioned many times, the leaves, each leaf on the tree is somewhat different from every other leaf. I mean, they basically have the same shape. Each fruit is somewhat different. So all of the fruit of a particular tree has the same taste, but, you know, some of them grow bigger, some of them, the color is somewhat different. Yes? So on the Chaitanya tree, everyone should be getting the fruit of love of God. That's how you tell it's a bona fide branch of the tree. But still, the branch may look different. The leaves may look different. I mean, there's going to be these kind of differences. Then when you go to the other sampradayas, if we're going to go, the Nimbarka sampradaya is at present the smallest sampradaya. They're mostly based in Mathura, and they are primarily devotees of Radha and Krishna. They seem very similar to the Gaudiya Sampradaya, but again, they have their differences. They chant, they don't chant Hare Krishna, they chant Radha Krishna. And you will hear them chanting in Vrindavan, especially the followers of Nimbarkacharya. Then you have the followers of Madhvacharya who are not affiliated with Lord Chaitanya. And some of them, in fact, are quite critical of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And quite critical of a lot of the modern Gaudiyas, and they claim that we're not really associated with them. And you have with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who challenged the Tattvavadis of the Madhva Sampradaya. But certainly Madhva is a bona fide Vaishnava. And he has many followers who are attaining to Krishna consciousness. But again, you'll find the emphasis is somewhat different. Even some of his basic philosophy differs. And then you have the Sampradaya Balabhacharya, which Rupa Goswami mentions in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Pushtimarg, as being another way of saying bhakti. But again, their emphasis is different. Their emphasis is mostly on Vatsalya Bhav rather than on Madhurya Bhav. They do talk about Madhurya Bhav, but the emphasis is on Vatsalya Bhav. And again, they're somewhat different. And if you look at the Sri Sampradaya, we have a tremendous amount in common with the Sri Sampradaya. And although they recognize Radha and Krishna, their emphasis is on Lakshmi Narayan. And again, their emphasis is somewhat different. Their emphasis is more on surrender than on chanting. So you'll find these differences among the four sampradayas that Srila Prabhupada mentions here. And then if we go beyond the Vaishnava sampradayas, and we go, say, to Christianity and its mother religion, Judaism and Islam, all connected originally through Abraham, called them the Abrahamic religions. So then you'll find, again, there's a universal principle that there's God, that we're meant to serve God, that we're meant to love God. But you'll find differences in practice, you'll find differences in theology. And even within Christianity, there are so many thousands of different branches, and some, of course, main branches, you know, the Eastern Orthodox and the Roman Catholic. And then you have main Protestant branches, and some of them have sub-branches and sub-sub, and then you have those that are considered to be cultish by some Christians, like Jehovah's Witnesses and Seventh-day Adventists and Mormons, which are also huge groups of people adhering to some form of Christianity. Within Judaism, of course, you have the Orthodox, Conservative, and Reform, and then within them you have many different branches, especially within the Orthodox. You have the traditional Orthodox, you have the modern Orthodox, you have the Hasidim. And then among them, you have many different rebbes and many different acharyas and again, somewhat different practices. And with Islam, you have the Sunnis and the Shiites. And of course, you also have the Sufis, who are often not considered valid by the Sunnis and the Shiites. And the main differences between the Sunnis and the Shiites is whether or not they have a disciplic succession coming from Muhammad's descendants, and whether or not they will allow pictures of Muhammad's descendants. So, but there's also other differences. I mean, in the Sri Sampradaya also, there's two main different branches as to whether or not Lakshmi is considered Vishnu Tattva or Jiva Tattva. And these branches also deal with differences in terms of whether or not people not born in Brahmin families can chant Vedic mantras, such as even Om. So you have these branches upon branches upon branches upon branches. This is always the case. Anyone who thinks that this is not going to be the case, they're not studying history or they're not observant. This branching is a normal function. And in fact, we find branching within the biological world. You know, branching is a very effective way of distribution and collection. Just like in our body, there's so many branching of blood vessels in our lungs. There's the bronchial tree, all of this. So this sort of branching is the most effective way of distribution and the most effective way of collection within nature. So we should expect that because the laws of nature are the laws of God, that there's going to be this sort of branching. Now, you know, some of the branching occurs because there's differences in time, place, and circumstances. There's difference in application. There's difference in how this universal knowledge should be taught. And some of this branching just is because different individuals have their different opinions and they have their different emphasis. Now, all of this is not to say that everyone who claims to be religious is religious. In fact, Srila Prabhupada talks about in this purport the false religions. You know, any religion that doesn't teach love and service to God is a false religion. Any religion that teaches you that the purpose of religion is to become rich and powerful, that is a false religion. Any religion that's teaching you that, you know, just simply through some mechanical means by your own endeavor, you're going to become liberated or you're going to become happy is a false religion. Any religion that denies the existence of God is a false religion. Any religion that doesn't teach one to know God and to love Him and to connect with Him in service is a false religion. So there are also false religions. Just like, you know, there are weeds. There are poisonous plants. So that is also a fact. The problem comes when people of one genuine religion label anyone who's not in their particular practice as a false religion. So this is a very popular pastime among religions and religious people and religious organizations, that because there are false religions, that then they declare, I mean, there really are false religions. It's just like there are fake doctors and so forth. And they just declare anyone who doesn't believe exactly what we believe and do exactly what we do is false. And this, favorite pastime of religionists is certainly also found among the Gaudiyas, and it's certainly also found within the Sarasvat branch. It's certainly also found within the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, this kind of mentality. You know, I have one godbrother who most of his posts on social media is to try to discern what is the exact minute details of how one should follow this or that. And often he'll ask, well, what exactly did Srila Prabhupada do in this circumstance? Which may not be relevant, of course, in another circumstance. But this is his obsession. Is, you know, I have to make sure I get everything right. and that's laudable in one sense, but it's kind of missing the point. And he'll often, you know, anyone who does anything at all differently, it's wrong. And we find that among religious people and spiritual people, there's this diversion of energy. You know, we read about in the Shastra how someone is becoming very spiritually advanced and the demigods send a beautiful woman to distract this meditating male yogi, right? So that he doesn't become powerful and take over the position of the demigods. And this meditating male yogi becomes disturbed I was just finishing reading how Sobering Muni became disturbed, not by some beautiful celestial woman, but by some fish. So he sees fish having sex, and then he just like, ah, I got to do that too. Let me get a woman. And so we can also have our different apsaras, our different distractions. Hey, it may not be some beautiful woman from a heavenly planet. We're probably not important enough for Indra to do that. But maybe it's just getting embroiled in some, you know, trivial thing. Thinking that we're defending the faith and we're maintaining purity and all this kind of stuff. And all we're doing is getting embroiled in something on the side. Or when we expend our energy trying to be superior. My teacher is better than your teacher. My organization is better than your organization. You know, you're all false religionists. And it's a way that the material energy tests our resolve and siphons off our energy. That instead of preaching universal love of God, we're ending up fighting with other people who are teaching universal love of God in another way. I mean, it's like, I'm sure this goes on in other countries as well, but in the United States, universities often have sports teams. They often have football teams. Big universities particularly, they have football teams. And these football teams fight against the, of course it's a ritualized fight, but still people get hurt. Sometimes they get really hurt. So these ritualized teams fight against the football teams of other universities. So here where we are in North Carolina, we have the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, and we also have Duke University, and we have North Carolina State University. Those are our three big universities in this area, and each of them has football teams, and they play against each other, and people are, you know, they get very emotional about it. UNC Chapel Hill has to beat Duke, or Duke has to beat NC State, and they have their team colors, and they have their, you know, they're really into it, and it's on television, and people who went to these universities, you know, 10, 20 years before, they're rooting for their teams, and of course, it is ritualized fighting, but it's still, there's some mood like this. You know, well, I went to Yale, Yale is better than Princeton, Princeton is better than Harvard, Penn State is better, and people are doing this. And we're not meant to have our religious affiliation and religious organization be like football teams, where we're fighting with each other and we're trying to emerge victorious. This is not how we're meant to use our energy. We don't find here in this purport and in this verse that that we're meant to use our energy to fight against these other branches. Now, we are meant to use our energy to fight against false religions. But we have to be able to discern that just because a religious system is not exactly the same as mine doesn't mean that it's false. What we are meant to do is protect the world. Right? Srila Prabhupada is talking about here. Right? What does he say? Just as a king gives protection to the citizens. Right? So the government protects the citizens. They have a police force. They have an army. They have a medical system. They have food. They have water. Then they're supposed to be protecting the citizens. So those of us who are in a system of religion and spirituality, we are meant to be protecting the world. We are meant to be guiding the world to love of God. And it doesn't mean that everybody has to join our organization. And again, we run into this kind of thing. You know, we had a situation. I was in the temple once where there was a guest coming, every day for 4 years, but not participating in the temple program, just coming and doing their own thing. And eventually some of the devotees got very upset and saying, well, if you're coming, you need to participate in our programs in our own way. You know, you can't just come and be doing your own prayers quietly in the background. You know, you have to be joining our organization in our way. So otherwise, you know, we don't want you here anymore. You have to be part of our system. So this is often what's done. And this sort of thing steals away our valuable energy, our valuable time, our valuable thought from our real mission, which is to counter atheism and materialism and cheating and bring people to actual bliss. So we should be asking ourselves, am I using my energy to protect the world? Or am I using my energy just to fight with other devotees of the Lord about trivial things that are of no real importance in the real scheme of life? So, questions, comments, additions, subtractions, chastisements, objections.
So, how do we deal with the spoke about branching, which is a natural, function of growth? And so, how do we keep branching from destroying ISKCON?
Well, there are three main ways that religious organizations have dealt with branching. So one is where they subsume the branching within the religious system. And the GBC has been talking about this for quite a while. That's called orders, where within the organization you have different groups that can have their own emphasis and still be part of the group. Now, we already do this. We just don't do it officially, and we don't celebrate it. So we already have various leaders. Some of them have initiated disciples, some don't. But we already have various leaders that have their own emphasis and their own way of looking at things, and their, and they have their own followers and their own centers, and they're still part of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, but they have a particular emphasis. So that's already going on, but as I say, we don't really recognize it like that. We don't really... we more just sort of tolerate it and pretend it doesn't exist. So one way of dealing with that would be to openly celebrate it and openly acknowledge it. Then another way to deal with branching, and this is something else that happens, is what's done, now that first thing is done in, especially by the Roman Catholic Church. The second thing is done mostly by Protestant religious groups, where if you're a member of any Baptist church, you're considered a member of all the Baptist churches. And so they have separately run organizations, which you're still considered a Baptist. So we found this in ISKCON, that we have these kind of parallel organizations, what you could call like sister organizations. But we tend not only to not celebrate that, we tend to consider, most of these different parallel groups considers the other parallel groups to be bogus. So this has been quite a problem for us. And one way to deal with this is to recognize that there are going to be parallel sister organizations and to have at least some format where we're able to work conjointly. We're not going to work conjointly in everything, but we can work conjointly in some things. We can work conjointly in festivals, we can work conjointly in kirtan, we can work conjointly in prasadam distribution, in some festivals and so forth and so on. But not that we're going to work conjointly in everything. That's not going to happen. If people wanted to work conjointly in everything, they wouldn't have formed a sister organization. That's just... And to have respect for everyone. There's a couple who've been very interested in Krishna consciousness, and they've been coming to this temple for a while, and they were asking me, about other sister organizations in the area. And, my response is, well, I think ISKCON is best. That's why I'm a member. I said, but, you can go check it out and find what resonates with you. That's your... And not to be afraid of that. There's a Home Depot near here, and sometimes when I've shopped there, they said, well, you can also check out Tractor Supply Company. And it's interesting. I've never actually checked out Tractor Supply Company. But the fact that they tell me that I can do that makes me more likely to want to shop at Home Depot. So then another way of dealing with branching, which is done primarily by the Buddhists, is that you actually encourage people to go and start their own branch. And this is the concept on a small scale of the Bhakti Vriksha program that Jaipataka Swami started, looking at these sort of models, that you start a program with 15 people. Once you get 15 people, then people have to leave and start their own branch, their own system, and that is encouraged. Okay, we have someone here called Rain Man. Do you make it rain? Who are you, Rain Man?
Who's raising your hand?
Hare Krishna.
Mataji.
Yes.
I had a question also about the branching. My question is, before ISKCON was established, was ISKCON a result of branching? Because I thought that Prabhupada had godbrothers that had their own branch or something. Could you clarify that for me, please?
Yes. Could you tell me who you are?
My real name?
Yes, please.
My real name is Richard, but Narahari calls me Rain Man.
I see. Okay. Nice to meet you, Richard.
Thank you.
Well, first of all, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati's Gaudiya Math was in itself already a branch. Bhaktivinoda Thakur had 10 children. One of his sons, Lavi Prasad, was teaching Krishna consciousness in a different way. So you have there at least two branches. And then you have, as I was mentioning, many followers of the Gaudiya Sampradaya who are not associated with Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati. So already there you had a branch. After the passing from this world of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, his organization branched. And I have one friend who's affiliated with one of those branches, and she'll say to me, you know, people in ISKCON shouldn't refer to the Gaudiya Math as if it's monolithic. There's many different Gaudiya Maths. They're run by different leaders, and they have a different emphasis. And so that was already the case. And when Srila Prabhupada retired from family life, and he wanted to take the sannyas order, so first he approached his godbrother who ran one of those Maths, and that godbrother was not so inclined to help him. So Prabhupada then approached a godbrother in another branch of the Gaudiya Math, who was inclined to help him. And then Srila Prabhupada tried at first, I mean, Prabhupada incorporated, in India, he tried to start something called the League of Devotees, which did not work. And then in the United States, he started something very similar to the League of Devotees, called the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And Prabhupada incorporated that, I believe, in 1967, 66 or 67, he incorporated that. He had to get a religious corporation to function in America, but he didn't call it like any kind of mutt. He called it ISKCON. Now, still until about 1972, Srila Prabhupada was trying over and over and over again to work conjointly with some of his godbrothers in India and to have some association with their mutt, and none of them were particularly interested. I mean, he had people who were favorable and who were encouraging, but they weren't interested to actually work with him. So after about 1972, Srila Prabhupada gave up on that idea. And, I mean, he still maintained friendly relationships with some of his godbrothers, like Swami B.R. Sridhar and Keshav Maharaj, but he was primarily working on his own. So, yes, ISKCON is definitely the result of branches upon branches upon branches upon branches, yes. Definitely. Anybody else?
Krishna, Mataji, thank you very much. Thank you very much, Yamuna Devi, for this wonderful class. But the question is, don't you think that devotees or people in general, they are always looking for their own, for a sangha that they can relate to, that they can think the same way, and they don't have to argue different points of philosophy or different points of consciousness, and they really don't want to hear from some other sangha or some other group with different differences of opinion. They just want to stay with their own. kind of, and maybe that's why they say, well, the other guys are wrong, but I'm right and everybody else is wrong. But don't you think that there is a truth to it, that people want to stay with
people? Yeah, there is, of course. And in fact, one of the things that we're told by our acharyas is that we should associate with like-minded people. I mean, that's makes life so much easier. You know, if I'm really inspired to spread Krishna consciousness through cow protection, then it's good for me to spend a lot of time with other people who are also so inclined. I mean, it's just, it's natural that I'm going to do that. You know, I'm personally involved primarily in research and study and writing and teaching. And so I have groups of devotees who are also inclined in that way that I work with and I associate with. And that's a natural and beneficial thing. You know, the people who are dedicated to being pujaris, or hang out with pujaris. Here I'm taking care of Tulsi Devi, and on Facebook I'm members of a Tulsi group. And we talk about what's going on with Tulsi Devi. So this is, it's very natural. What's not natural is if I decide that the people in the pujari group are all nonsense and only the people in the scholarly group are bona fide. You know, that becomes absurd. And also, we have times when we can be with everybody from every, you know, where everybody can join together in kirtan. And then there's also times when I'm enriched by being with people who are not like-minded. You know, their point of view and their perspective also enriches me as a person. I mean, in the spiritual world, we find, for example, the gopis have different groups. There's, you know, the right wing and the left wing and the neutral and the friendly. And generally, they're hanging out with their own group. But there are times when all the groups are together, or times when parts of different groups are together. So that should be true for us as well. To have like-minded people, that people who share our interests, people who share our perspective, is very nourishing. To have only that is stifling. To have only that. We also want to have a broad perspective. We also want to love, you know, if we love Krishna, we should love everyone who loves Krishna. And we should love everyone that Krishna loves. And there are certainly times we should broaden our perspective as far as it possibly can be. So some interplay of those. You know, if we're only having a super broad association, we're not going to be properly nourished in our own service. And if we're only being nourished in our particular perspective, then it's going to be like someone who doesn't have a varied diet and they're not getting enough vitamins and minerals. So, you know, there has to be both. I think it's healthy to be able to move on the continuum between people I'm associating with who I can really go deeply into my own mood, and people I'm associating with where all we have is the commonality of wanting to know God and love Him. You know, I've been going to the ISKCON organized interfaith meetings, and that's our only commonality. We want to know and love God. But it's very enlivening to spend those 3 days where that's the only commonality. Now, I wouldn't want to have that be, nobody there would want to have that be their only sangha. Is that all right?
Yes, thank you very much. Of course, there are differences of opinion, and of course, in certain churches or certain temples, they wouldn't want to allow other people from other trains of thought to be, like, I remember in 2012 I was visiting Alachua, and I remember that Narayan Maharaj was visiting Alachua around the same time, and there was a huge controversy because the devotees in Alachua, the ISKCON temple, wouldn't allow Narayan Swami to speak in the temple, and the Narayan disciples were so enraged that their guru was not allowed to speak in this temple. And I was thinking, well, you know, he's from a different train of thought. Why would they allow him to speak in the temple? So there was so much discussion and argument about that.
Yes. But I think, you know, reasonably so. I don't expect that I would be invited to speak in other Gaudiya branches. I might be, I might not be. You know, I mean, even in other branches of ISKCON, I may or may not be invited to speak. That's even true within ISKCON, what to speak of within other branches. It's a very individual thing. Anyway, these things can... There's a place for saying that, you know, we have our own mood and we have our own direction and we want to have people of a similar mood and direction. And there's also a place for we want diversity of view. We want diverse. They both have to be there. I think if you only have one or the other, then it's a problem. You know, if you make such a tight wall around your organization that you never bring in any fresh views and you never then you're going to be ingrown. And such things cause all sorts of diseases and problems in the natural world. But again, if you don't have some protection, you're also going to have problems. So, you know, swinging from one way to the other, more, at what time are different things appropriate?
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. That was very nice. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, it's not a one size fits all. All right. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Thank you very much.